And hello, everybody, on this Thursday morning, March 17th. March Madness begins. Adam Azer, Scott White, Al Melchior talking busts and Juan Nicasio.
Woo! Woo! Busts Juan Nicasio. And bad brackets. And Juan Nicasio, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we can busts talk about our brackets. You guys ready to give your final four?
I've filled out my bracket.
It's good.
It's not necessarily the most informed bracket ever.
That's okay. Well, we can give that out in a little bit, I guess. I want to welcome everybody to the show, and thank you for listening. If you've been along with us for the ride, you've heard our sleepers, our breakouts. Today, our busts. Tomorrow, a lot of your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I did a Twitter poll about Kyle Schwarber because he's one of Scott's busts, and I look forward to arguing about it. So that's coming up. But again, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Our Pirates pitcher of the day is Juan Nicasio, the former Rocky, played for the Dodgers, pitched in relief last year, but most of his career spent with the Colorado Rockies. He threw four scoreless innings, gave up one hit, and struck out 10 Orioles. Quick side note, whenever your starting pitcher is facing the Orioles, you can prepare for a lot of strikeouts in 2016. But holy cow, Al! Juan Nicasio, the latest reclamation project. Do you think this is legit?
I don't know. I mean, you get Searage plus great spring stats, and I think that's the recipe for maybe a little bit of draft day speculation. But I mean, I was pretty excited about Nicasio when he first came up, but that was 2011. He hasn't really been that great since, and yet he got hit in the head by a liner and
broke his neck.
Yeah. So
and was pitching in Colorado at the start of his career.
Yeah. So
and
all factors.
Didn't have Ray Searage.
You're building a good case.
No, I don't know that he's even going to have a rotation spot. I think the odds are still against him as of this moment. But every time I talk about Tyler Glass now, I talk about how bad the back of the Pirates rotation is. Ryan Vogelsong and Jeff Locke are both pretty awful.
So there's room for both of them. Glass now and Nicasio.
Well, yeah, eventually there is. I don't know. He was not on my radar. I would assume he was not on anybody's radar before this start yesterday, but striking out 10 of the, 13 batters you face?
Yeah.
That's going to open some eyes.
It's impressive, and we'll see what it means. I mean, there are good spring stats, and then there's that. That's on another level. Meanwhile, Scott, you said before the show off the air that you might be removing Rich Hill from your Sleepers 2.0 column.
I might be. I kind of had flashbacks to the nights when I'd wake up with cold sweats in 2007 because he had a start where his curveball wasn't on and he just got pummeled, because that's pretty much all he is a great curveball behind an arm. And
there's stuff behind the arm too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just as a human being. But
you know, right. Maybe he's like really cool guy. You can't, don't put him in a box, Scott. That's really...
No, I mean, even if he has the good year the Athletics are hoping he has, and I'm hoping he has, it's going to be kind of like a Tim Wakefield scenario for those who have been playing fantasy baseball long enough to remember him. He would have starts where he was just dominant because his knuckleball was in top form. But then when it wasn't, he would get crushed. And I feel like Hill's going to be that pitcher. And so far, the curveball hasn't been on this spring because he has an arm angle issue that may get sorted out quickly, maybe not. And I think you add that uncertainty onto the uncertainty that was inherent. And I'm getting less enthusiastic about drafting him. It doesn't mean he's not a sleeper anymore. It just means there are other sleepers I'd rather feature over him. So, yeah, I'm thinking he's getting bumped for the Sleepers 2.0 column.
All right, that's Rich Hill. We have injury updates on Hyunjin Ryu, the Nationals rotation, Denard Span already injured. This guy can't stay healthy. Hopefully it's not that serious. We have some closer news and your emails after we do busts. Also, Sportsline.com. You know, if you're listening to this before the game start this afternoon, Sportsline.com is an optimal bracket, expert brackets. And even if you don't want to use it for March Madness, you can do it after the brackets lock, because it's much more than just brackets. A, B, and C grades for the spread and the totals on every game, and that's in the NBA and the NHL. Baseball when it starts up. So sportsline.com is only $10 a month for an amazing, amazing service. And you can listen to our opening line podcast. If you're playing Daily Fantasy, we have a Daily Fantasy Live podcast. All of our podcasts available at cbssports.com/podcast. And I do want to thank the people who have joined our bracket challenge for
how
our
2006.
Oh, you want to guess?
600.
683.
Wowzer.
Yeah, no, I'm actually quite excited about that.
You could have won that Price is Right style.
I was hoping for 500, and I saw 683 at 9:30 a.m., so we might even get more by the time the tournament starts, and I look forward to beating you all. So thank you for joining.
You're going to love my bracket.
Well, at least
one-fourth of it.
Let me get to your bracket in a second, and you're stupid for taking Miami to the Final Four, which I'm guessing is what you did.
That is stupid. I don't think I have them in the Sweet 16.
All right, well, just one
again,
second,
I know
guys.
I know nothing. I don't know why I'm calling you stupid. I'm sorry.
I just want to say that...
look at my track record. That's proof enough.
I guess you can't hear me today. I just want to say that the brackets, even after the brackets lock... There's still a lot of things you can do. You can make new picks every round. So if things didn't go so well for you in round one, or if you just want to continue off some positive momentum, you can make new picks every round with our brackets on cbssports.com/brackets or on our CBS Sports app, which is great. You should get it. All right, let's reveal our Final Four. No, we are not going to spend a lot of time talking about this. Don't worry, fantasy baseball fans. Final Four, Al, you want to start since it's at least 25% insane?
Yeah. Oh, no, it's more than that.
Okay.
So yeah, I've got the U, I've got Oregon, West Virginia, and Michigan State. And I've got Oregon and Michigan State in the final. And should I keep going?
Yeah, sure.
Got the Ducks.
Wow. All right. Good for you. I went a little bit more conventional with Kansas. I did take Miami to the Sweet 16. And all we need, guys, we just need Miami to win tonight. I'm very nervous, but if they win tonight, I can take a three-hour road trip and go see them on Saturday, and that's all I want in this process. I just want to see my team. So let's root for them tonight.
We don't need anything, Adam.
That, come on, for me. You can root for – nobody took Buffalo to beat them. So just you can root against them after tonight.
Mark Richt isn't coaching the basketball team, last I checked.
No, but spring practice started, so now you're all in with Mark Richt and the Hurricanes. All right, so I have Kansas, Kansas, Oklahoma, Xavier for some reason, and Michigan State, and I just went with Kansas over Michigan State. So pretty chalky bracket for some reason because I think it's going to be a year of upsets, but couldn't bring myself to do it. How about you, Scott?
I have more crossover with you than Al.
good sign for you.
Kansas, North Carolina, mm-hmm. Oklahoma, and Virginia.
Ah, okay.
Kansas over Virginia in the championship game.
Virginia, all right. ACC.
Yes, that is my one oddball pick that is actually not so oddball. Well, it is oddball, but they're still a number one seed, so how oddball is it?
Well, I'm glad we're all participating, and thank you to all the listeners for participating as well. Almost 700 people, that's pretty awesome. And good luck, and if we can figure out a way to make this happen, the person who has the most points, unless there's a tie, then I'm just going to pick one. The person who has the most points at the end of the weekend gets a spot in the podcast league.
Oh, what if it's me?
It won't be. Yasiel Puig, guys, he will not be suspended, and I don't really think anybody was drafting him thinking there would be a suspension.
So yeah, this is no surprise.
Yeah, I don't think his ADP will rise, but Puig will not be suspended. Meanwhile, in the Dodgers rotation, Hyunjin Ryu is going to be out until at least June due to his shoulder injury. So, Al, what does this mean for Ryu? What does this mean for other people vying to be in that Dodgers rotation?
Well, for Ryu, I think it means that he doesn't need to be drafted in a 12-team mixed league. I just don't think he's up for stashing. Doesn't have the upside of a Zach Wheeler, although Wheeler probably comes back even later. But I'm just not inclined to do that. In terms of the people vying for the for his spot, I mean, it's kind of the same cast of characters that we've been talking about. Jose De Leon, still in the mix. Mike Bolsinger. Alex Wood was going to be in anyway. It doesn't seem like his forearm issue is going to keep him out of the rotation for now. So pretty much status quo.
Okay. Now, I remember, Scott, a few days ago, maybe last week, you wrote that Bronson Arroyo was having a good spring and that could be bad news for maybe a Joe Ross or a Tanner Roark, but Arroyo has a torn labrum, so that's bad. That's unfortunate news for Arroyo, and I guess for fantasy owners, unfortunately for Arroyo, this is good news for fantasy owners. It gets more exciting options in the Nationals rotation.
We are celebrating his torn labrum and the end of his career because of what it means for Joe Ross and Tanner Roark.
There you go.
It's just the honest truth, Bronson. Nothing against you.
I always liked him. I was rooting for him.
Go play the guitar.
Not Joe Ross's expense.
Yeah.
We're going to have to see how serious this Denard Span injury is, but he hurt his shoulder yesterday, and he is an injury-prone player, and we've mentioned that Span is awesome in points leagues, and he still, Span has value in roto leagues, right? I mean, five outfielder league, these guys definitely getting drafted.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
At three outfielder league, because he's a points league, I don't want to say stud, but it's kind of true based on the numbers.
Yeah. But I just mean in roto, even in categories, Span is a very relevant player, but gets the injury bug. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. Trevor May will not be in the Twins rotation. He will be in the bullpen. Jed Lowry.
Impacts there. Sorry. Jose Berrios outlasted May in the competition there. So he's still alive along with Tyler Duffy and Ricky Nolasco.
Ooh.
Yeah, pretty intriguing, actually. The Twins rotation. With intriguing position battles. Who would have thought?
Well, not so much in Alaska.
No, the other two. And as far as Trevor May goes, I mean, probably no fantasy value for now. I did get a Twitter question yesterday about reverse SPARPs and are there any relievers who are starter eligible who might close at some point? And I think May and Drew Pomeranz, both long shots, but, it could happen for either of them.
And Jed Lowry looks like he's going to start the season as Oakland's second baseman. What kind of interest do you have in Jed Lowry?
Minimal. Second base is so deep.
Yeah.
And he's not eligible at shortstop anymore. It'd be different if he was. But the last 2 years haven't been so great for Jed.
Yeah, he's more of a 14-15 mixed league option for me. But I do look at him among those later round options in those formats, because I think he is going to have some multi-positional eligibility this year, can still play shortstop, eligible at third, playing second this year. So I think that gives him a leg up on some of the others.
And Milwaukee will not name a closer before opening day. Will Smith, Jeremy Jeffress, they are competing for that, but it could be committee. What's your take on that situation, the Milwaukee closer situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be committee to start the year. And so it's one of those cases where, neither one's really great on draft day, but I tend to go with the guy who appears to be more skilled, because more often than not, those relievers seem to win out. And I like them both, but I would give Will Smith the edge there.
Na, 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 na. I would too.
Cool. Yeah. Where is he in your rankings? Is Smith even a top 24 closer?
I think he's just below that for me, but I will check.
No, it's not a team that's going to win a lot of games, which doesn't help. Although, are they that bad? I mean, they have some... Yeah, they're pretty bad. They have some good players, though. Actually, I was thinking more with the Reds, because we talk about the Reds being terrible. They have intriguing hitters. And do you think the Reds are going to be just a train wreck this year?
Well, they're going to be bad. They're rebuilding, yeah. They have a lot of young talent that could become impactful in fantasy this year. Pitching especially. I mean, they have a lot of pitching depth, kind of like the Braves do, except I think the Reds is even closer. Thinking guys like Cody Reed and Robert Stevenson, both top prospects. And then, we kind of like John Lamb and Brandon Finnegan. But hitters too. Jose Peraza, I think, has enough speed and should get enough bats in a super utility role to make an impact late in roto leagues, or to make an impact in roto leagues and maybe worth a late pick. And then I like Jesse Winker down the line as a midseason call-up power patience guy.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, for a team that's supposed to be so bad, I mean, their rotation doesn't look great, but they've got Votto, Mesoraco, if he returns to form, they get anything out of Billy Hamilton. They still have Jay Bruce. They're not completely bereft of talent in their order.
No. I would think the Brewers finish behind them.
Okay, guys. Well, if you want to compete against us in our podcast league, if you didn't hear the announcement on Monday's show, we are drafting 2 weeks from, we're drafting on the 28th. What did we say, 8 p.m. on the 28th?
I think that's right.
Yeah, 8 p.m. on the 28th. If you can make that time and you want to be in our podcast league, email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. That's the letter I, and put podcast league in the subject line. I've seen some emails that just say baseball podcast, and there are league submissions, and I don't like that. So please put podcast league in the subject
line. You're messing up Adam's filter system. Come on.
Well, it's just I might not put you in the podcast league folder if you're not lucky enough for me to actually read your email and see that was a mistake. So podcast league's got
to
be there.
To your own detriment.
Yes.
Be OCD about this.
Now, I am trying to pull up the Twitter poll results, but let's get into the Schwarbs. Kyle Schwarber, who is going in the fourth round in both Roto and head-to-head points leagues. And
head-to-head
Yeah. I asked if that was too early, the fourth round. And I'm pretty sure it was overwhelmingly yes. And I agree with that. But that doesn't mean he's a bust. So, Scott?
So, the people who follow you are more aware of this than the people who actually draft. This is interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because the results are what they are because people are doing it. And yet people are saying, don't do that. There's a disconnect there.
It's a selection bias. People who follow Adam they're in the know.
Well, yeah, they listen to our show.
Yeah. I am, again, having the flashbacks, the cold sweats.
Uh-oh.
Thinking about my enthusiasm for Evan Gattis last year, catcher eligible player who wasn't going to be playing catcher, had shown big time power as a part timer. And, you know, he had 27 homers, 88 RBI. It wasn't terrible, but he didn't live up to the price tag. It was a disappointment as far as that went. He was also going at about the fourth round, by the way. And Schwarber reminds me very much of Gattis, both as a player, and the situation reminds me of Gattis's last year. Now, Schwarber was obviously a much higher end prospect than Gattis, so maybe I'm not giving the relative upside enough credit.
Ding, ding,
but
ding.
At the same time, he only hit 16 home runs last year. You know, we're asking him to do something he hasn't done before. And I've made the argument about plenty of players. Oh, he did this in this amount of bats. So if he can carry that over to a full season, he'll be great. And I think it's an argument worth making when the price is right. But this price assumes it's going to carry over for a full season, kind of like we assumed the same would happen for Evan Gattis last year. And that's setting yourself up for failure, I believe, because while it could carry over, I think it's just as likely not to carry over. And by the way, he hit what, 240 something last year? So it's not all teddy bears and gumdrops. There's some downside there too. Or gummy bears too.
Yeah.
And whatever kind of candy or childhood comfort item you want to throw in there works. That's not what Schwarber is. He is a all or nothing hitter, at least based on what he's shown us so far. And looking at the peripherals, I don't have much reason to believe otherwise.
But, Scott, I think you're okay, so this is my beef. Like, I think fourth round's a little early, but there's a difference between being overdrafted and being a bust. You know, he would have to perform like a 10th rounder, I think, to be a bust if he's going in the fourth rounder. Well, maybe not 10th round, maybe like the 8th round. But whatever, that's semantics. My beef is, I don't really think it's fair to just compare him to Evan Gattis, because like you said, Schwarber is a much higher end prospect, and he hit 16 home runs. He did that in 69 games, and on a per plate appearance basis, he was better than Buster Posey last year. And also, Schwarber hit 5 home runs in 27 at bats in the postseason. So there's no doubting his power, and I just feel like he came up and struck out a lot. But he was making an adjustment to major league pitching. So if he can cut down even if he doesn't cut down the strikeouts, look at the top 10 hitter strikeouts last year. You've got Let's see. Chris Davis, Chris Bryant, Ian Desmond, J.D. Martinez, Jock Peterson, Nelson Cruz, Cole Calhoun, Justin Upton, Mike Trout, Michael Taylor. You've got some great fantasy players in there. And I just don't want to, I don't think we can hold it against, Schwarber. What Evan Gattis did doesn't mean Schwarber's going to do the same. He might also bat 246. They both had the same batting average last year, but he might hit 35 home runs.
He might. Yeah, all this is possible, but it's also possible he hits 240 with 28 home runs. And I don't think that's a fourth round pick.
No,
especially, you know what really clinched it for me? You know what really said, I'm kind of uneasy about Kyle Schwarber. You know what really took it from that to, yeah, I want this guy on my bus list?
What's that?
Was the day the Cubs signed Dexter Fowler. Because now, not only do they have to find Javier Baez, who they were working out in the outfield just to maybe open up a spot for him as a platoon player, but now they have to find a bat for Jorge Soler, too. Two young right-handed sluggers who are supposed to be as big a part of this team's future as Schwarber is. How are they going to get them in? Probably by sitting the guy who stunk against left-handed pitchers last year. And so if that's the case, then the scenario isn't even as promising as it was for Gattis last year. It means maybe 400 at-bats for Schwarber. And to me, that makes him especially not worth a fourth-round pick.
It also means a much better batting average. And I think it would hurt him a lot in points leagues with the fewer at-bats. But I don't know that it would hurt him that much in roto leagues because he didn't do anything against lefties last year anyway. He was terrible against lefties, but he was so good against righties.
But what I was going to say is I think he actually needs to be platooned to hit 240. I actually...
Wow.
Yeah, no,
you're going farther than I am.
Well, in a way I am, because I don't expect him to hit 240. I think 225, 230 is more realistic. But by the same token, Adam started to say what I was thinking, which is that I agreed with everything you said, Scott, and yet I'm probably taking Schwarber just a round later in the fifth just because of what else is out there, catcher, and the power upside. So I think he is being drafted a little too early and for all the reasons you mentioned, but I think even so,
yeah,
he's still one of my top three catchers.
Well, I can understand how you think calling him a bust is just too strong of a label.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be the case for a lot of my bus picks, but I don't think, you know, I would consider Gattis a bust last year, and it's not like he outright collapsed. 27 home runs, 88 RBI. Fine, he was useful. Nobody ever sat him as a catcher-eligible player. From that perspective, you could say, yeah, he wasn't a bust, but I'm just thinking in terms of based on where I would have to draft this guy, is there any chance I would draft this guy? And the answer is a firm no for me.
Do you think that Schwarber, aside from the fact that you typically need two catchers in a roto league, which makes catchers more valuable to begin with, do you think Schwarber is more valuable in roto than he is in head-to-head points?
Yes, because the at-bats are going to be an issue.
Right.
And because the strikeouts are going to be an issue.
Right. Okay, now totally on the same page. We're probably just getting caught up in the labels there. All right, let's do one more of Scott's, then we'll bounce to Al's. And, of course, if you want more, you can read it on fantasynews.cbssports.com, fantasynews.cbssports.com for all of these sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Robinson Cano going in the fourth round in points league, the fifth round in rotisserie leagues. Another interesting guy, I got to be honest with you, I think these lists are fascinating. You've got some big names on here. And Cano was so good in the second half last year. First 3 months, he was terrible. He had a 621 OPS. Last 3 months, he hit 17 home runs, batted 330, and had a 920 OPS. But what trends are you seeing on a broader scale from Cano that's concerning you?
The fact that he's not that level player with near the consistency he was earlier in his career. Yeah, he had a monster second half. And all that monster second half did for him was make him, trying to count it up here, but I think it's the...
Number 5 in points, number 7 in roto.
But the 15th best, 15th best in terms of head-to-head points per game among second basemen behind Brandon Phillips, Daniel Murphy, Dustin Pedroia, Joe Panik.
But you know he also had the injury.
What injury are you referring to,
Adam? The sports hernia. That he had
that never
for.
Got repaired.
No, he had surgery for it
in the off season.
Yes, in the off season. Yeah.
So he was if you're going to blame it for his first half struggles, I think the second half kind of invalidates that argument. Because like you said, he was great.
Yeah.
But this is 2 years in a row now where we spent most of the season worried about him. And he was able to halfway correct it with a big second half both times. But he's now a 33-year-old middle infielder with not just declining base numbers, but the walk rate has fallen. The strikeout rate has risen. Those, to me, are clear signs of a decline at the age where it's commonly happening. I wouldn't mind Cano as like the seventh second baseman off the board. I think that's about where I have him ranked. But when I saw he's the third second baseman going off the board and in a range where there's still elite players, particularly in the outfield, available, no, there's no way I'm drafting him there. And I do think there's the potential, unlike Schwarber, that the rug could completely be pulled out from under him this year and he could just be bad.
Oh, yeah. I'll agree. Disagree?
Again, I don't disagree with most of what Scott's saying, but I do disagree with the conclusion. I actually have him in my top 300 as a fourth rounder. Haven't even considered drafting him that early, but I think that has more to do with the fact that second basemen aren't going that fast in our drafts. And the other difference is I do have Cano ahead of Anthony Rendon, which neither Scott nor Heath does, because I think Rendon's got risks of his own. He's very injury prone. He's been inconsistent so far as a major leaguer. And I'm not going to completely discount the second half for Cano. So I do have concerns. I'm not forgetting that three quarters of the last 2 years have not been very good for Cano, but you know, in terms of how he stacks up against the rest of the field, I've got him number five at second base, and I'm keeping him there.
To Al's busts, and we'll stay at second base, and let's go to Jason Kipnis. I such a confusing player to me, Al. He was number six in points, number eight in Roto last year, and he only hit 9 home runs and stole 12 bases. So yeah, what are you thinking about Kipnis?
I just think that he doesn't really have a whole lot to offer at this point. I mean, it looked like the first couple of seasons that he was a really intriguing power speed guy, which was, you know, enough to really elevate him, I think, to the elite at the position. But the steals were down last season. They have actually been down 2 seasons in a row, and the power hasn't been there since 2013. And what he gave you last season was a really high batting average in the first half, which looked really fluky, and I think very predictably it regressed in the second half. So what are you left with?
Well, if you guys are a little hesitant on Cano, and Scott, are you kind of feeling the same way as Al on Kipnis?
I'm not as down on Kipnis as Al is, but it's not like I've been making him in any way a priority in drafts. I don't think I've had him in a single mock draft, so I'm not entirely disagreeing with Al.
Then what does that say about second base and the way we should approach it?
Yeah, I think we... You know, I know not everybody listened to the second base preview, but it kind of what I was saying in that was that there's not many standouts at the position. Altuve, and I'd throw D. Gordon in there in a roto league, but otherwise, a lot of guys who are going to deliver close to the same thing. And Kipnis, to me, is not significantly better than Joe Panik or Logan Forsythe. You know, probably depends a little on which format, which of those two I'd go with, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's also Rougned Odor, who we talked on breakouts yesterday. I did mention that he is your favorite breakout.
He is. That makes it complicated because second base is the position I want to wait at, but doesn't always happen because of Odor.
When do you take Odor?
Round six.
Okay.
Any earlier? Best of luck to you.
From Odor to Lindor. So from breakout to bust, although I know Scott will not agree with this one, but Al, Francisco Lindor is on your bust list. He hit .313 with 12 home runs and 12 steals in 99 games last year. He had 27 walks to 69 strikeouts, and actually, despite playing only 99 games, finished as the number 8 shortstop in roto leagues last year, number 21 in points. All right, your thoughts on Lindor?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing what Lindor was able to do. And I don't trust it because so much of that production was packed into about the last 6 weeks of the season, 6 or 7 weeks. And it's sort of similar to what I was saying about Cano, that if you look at the last 2 years, well, most of it hasn't really been that impressive. And with Lindor, I'm even more suspicious of the relatively short term. It was even shorter term. It was about a month and a half. And also because it just doesn't jive with really who he was as a prospect. I don't have any problem expecting steals from Lindor. I think he could hit for a decent average, but I don't take it as a given. I think he's going to be really good against lefties, which is something I'll keep in mind for DFS and in terms of weekly lineup decisions, if I have them. But I'm not sure beyond that that he's going to be returning the value that he would need to based on where he's being drafted.
Now, you say it doesn't jibe with what he was as a prospect. I'm going to read a couple lines from the Baseball America Prospect Handbook the last 2 years. 2014, they said he could be a threat to hit 15 homers once he fills out. 2015, he got noticeably stronger in the weight room and worked to get in better hitting positions to tap more into his strength. If you translate last year's numbers over a full season, 650 plate appearances, it only is 18 home runs for Lindor. It's not like he was in a different stratosphere from what they were projecting for him. And yeah, I think considering his steal percentage and the kind of base stealer he was in the minors, that's going up too. So I think there probably is going to be some power regression, but there's enough there between the contact ability and the base stealing potential that Lindor is going to pretty easily be a top three shortstop. That's my take. I get what you're saying. That's where the disagreement comes in.
So Bogarts, Lindor, Seager, how do you rank those three?
I go Lindor, Seager, Bogarts. I think Al's exactly the
opposite,
right?
Completely the opposite. Yeah. That's right.
And I would just say that I am, for some reason, I think it's sort of irrational, not completely irrational, but I really want Corey Seager. I'm excited about him. Isn't he the highest the best prospect of the three?
Well, I mean, Bogarts is no longer a prospect.
Yeah, well, when he was a prospect, Bogarts was quite the prospect himself. But
yeah,
he was a bigger prospect.
He was right up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, since they're a couple years apart, and it's, I'm not really sure who is regarded as the bigger offensive, higher offensive potential guy. Probably Seager.
I'm going to guess, yeah.
Because he got to a point where he was the number one overall prospect. But it's pretty close. I think based on what we've seen from Bogart so far, I would be more willing to gamble on Seager, which is why I ranked him that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is with Seager, it's like, I know it was such a small sample size, but has Bogarts even come close to producing what Kyle Seager or Corey Seager produced last year in, I don't know, what was it, like 20 games?
Yeah, I think it was 99 at bats.
I don't want to overreact.
I'm sure Bogarts has had a 99 at bat stretch that was that good. You know, so it's,
I don't know.
It's hard to base anything off what Seager did in those 99 at bats last year. All I can really take from that is that, yes, he is major league ready. That's really all I take from that. The rest is just relying on, what he profiled as a minor leaguer.
All right. Some more busts here. Back to Scott White's list. Two pitchers that you are concerned about their injury, risk here. Johnny Cueto and Michael Pineda. And Cueto is going in the 7th round in Roto, 5th in points. Pineda is going in the 14th round in Roto, 11th in points. Okay, is it just injury with them?
No. I mean, the reason I'm hesitating is because, no, it's not just injury. They were also really bad at the end of last year, at least by their prior standards and at least by where they're getting drafted now. But were they bad because they're injured? And I think that is a likely scenario for both, which is, it would be good news in the long term, but it would be bad news in the short term because they are still expected to pitch at the start of the year. And, I could see that ending very badly for both, especially Pineda. I mean, it's hard to say Pineda has more bust potential than Cueto because Cueto is going so much earlier than Pineda, so he could hurt you more. But Pineda is a clearer case to me because just, I mean, you follow the you follow the time or the sequence here. That's the word I'm looking for. You follow the sequence of events at the end of the season. Going great. Couple really bad starts on the DL with a strained forearm. Comes back from the strained forearm. Doesn't get any better. Strained forearm is often the precursor to a torn elbow ligament and Tommy John surgery. So, I mean, he's looked fine this spring. Maybe he's okay. But to me, the way that played out, and, you know, it was kind of reminiscent, even a more dramatic case, actually, than the way Yu Darvish's, to the way Yu Darvish's 2014 ended. And obviously at the start of 2015, Darvish was having Tommy John surgery. So that's what I worry about with Pineda. And to a lesser degree, Cueto, whose elbow kind of acted up early in the year, never had a DL stint, but the numbers got gradually worse from there in terms of effectiveness and everything else.
I think with Pineda, when you look at his struggles, it's hard to know if this was the cause of it. But he threw 111 pitches on May 10th against Baltimore. He struck out 16 batters. I'm sure we all remember that start. 7 innings, 1 run, 16 strikeouts. And it was the first time he had thrown more than 101 pitches that season. And he had a 2.72 ERA up until that point. He immediately got bombed, gave up 9 earned runs in his next two starts, and he you know, had a few good starts after that. But after that start on May 10th, when he threw 111 pitches, Pineda was pretty bad the rest of the way. Ended up with a 4.37 ERA, ended up with a DL stint, as Scott mentioned. And I really like Pineda, and I'm not going to go so far as like speculate on Tommy John surgery for him, although you know he's had so many injuries it could happen. But I just worry that he's not more than like a 100-pitch pitcher. Which with the Yankees bullpen, those three guys after Chapman gets back and Chase and Shreve, I think will have a good year. It might not be the worst thing. Just give me 6 or 7 really good innings, and then we'll take care of the rest. Yeah. But
they don't want him to go more than 6 innings.
Yeah, I mean, they might not want him to go more than 7, honestly. And if he does have a game where he throws 110 pitches, it could be a concern. So I know what you're saying there. Cueto is just so tough for me because I get your point and I get Heath's point. The Giants, the medical staff, they looked at him. They approved him. They said, sign this guy. They gave him a lot of money. And he's been an ace. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball except for the last couple of months of the 2015 season. It's such a tough call. Al, where do you stand on Johnny Cueto?
I'm scared off. I'm at the point where I'm not even that concerned about his health. You know, the Giants don't appear to be. I mean, he's had 2 clean MRIs. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a lingering injury. Maybe there isn't. All I know is just that he wasn't very good for more than half the season.
But come on, but this
and maybe, maybe there was something he was doing mechanically to compensate for, for being hurt earlier in the year. I don't know. I can't know. I just don't like the result over such a long period of time.
But if he turns it around, it's not... It's not that long of a period of time when you put it in perspective with what he's done in his career, you know? If he
well,
turns
sure,
it around,
but I mean, it was the better part of a season. It was, you know, it was more than half the season.
Yeah, it was like 2/3.
And
it wasn't just ERA. It wasn't something you could point to and say it's bad luck.
No,
you know?
It was underlying stuff.
Right. The strikeouts were way down. He just didn't look like the same guy.
All right, so I'll give us some names. You tell me who you're taking ahead of Johnny Cueto. Sonny Gray. Yes or no? Ahead of Cueto.
I'd rather have Sonny Gray. I think I rank him behind Cueto.
You'd just rather wait for Gray.
Yeah.
Adam Wainwright.
Wainwright.
I have Wainwright higher.
Cole Hamels.
Hamels.
Definitely Hamels.
Danny Salazar.
Salazar?
That's kind of like Gray for me. I have him behind Cueto, but... I really want someone else to take Cueto, unless it's just great value.
All right, some more guys here. We'll go to Al's list. David Peralta, interesting. Now, remember we got that question, who's this year's AJ Pollock? And it's been just torturing me ever since. I would really like to know the answer to that. After the All-Star break, David Peralta hit .360 with a .401 on base and a .577 slugging percentage. He was awesome. But Al says David Peralta could be a bust in 2016.
Yeah, well, what part of that slash line stands out to you?
The on base?
Well, wait. Actually, the on base is only 41 points higher than the batting average.
Right.
So really, at the core of it, it's the batting average that's pumping that whole line up.
Oh, I thought you meant what was the bad part?
Yeah. Well, okay. But I guess that's part of the story, right? Because he didn't walk a whole lot. The power was good, an ISO over 200 in the second half, and I think that's something he could sustain. But the 360 batting average, it's not like he stopped striking out. He just hit 436 on balls in play. And I think a lot of the expectations behind his current draft position are the batting average. It has to do with the batting average they compiled last year. And not only that, but the RBI, I think, also could take a big hit as well.
RBIs, Al. RBIs.
I'm going with the poll voters on this one.
And CBS Sports style is RBI.
All right, fine.
Going against company policy, Adam?
You know what? I flip-flopped on this so many times. It feels unnatural to me to say RBI in the plural form. So I'm just going to say 75 RBIs or whatever the number may be. I'm going to be an RBIs guy.
Does it feel unnatural to you to say series is the plural of series? Because the plural of series is series.
This is totally different.
Yeah, I was just playing off your unnatural comment.
Wait,
that's all.
Al, Scott, I don't think you were on the podcast where we got the email telling us why it should be RBIs and not RBI.
No, I didn't hear it. I would probably agree with the argument if I ruled the world, it would be RBIs, but I don't. CBS rules the world, and CBS says RBI, so...
Okay.
I say RBI.
Company man. let's talk about some third baseman here. Al has Mike Moustakas as a bust, and Scott has Adrian Beltre as a bust. And quite frankly, seeing that he's going in the sixth round, that's insane. But let's go to Moustakas first and let Al speak here on Mike Moustakas.
Well, part of my hesitation to take Moustakas myself is just because I really don't know what to expect because he was two different hitters last year. First half Moose, second half Moose. First half Moose was pretty interesting because he had been one of the most extreme pole hitters in baseball, and he completely reversed that and was hitting for average, so it seemed to be working. It also sapped his power, and then he addressed that in the second half by reverting back to being pretty much who he was before 2015. But the thing is that when he did that reversion, we saw the power, which was great, but the batting average didn't sink as much as I would have expected it to. So I think there might be some unrealistic expectations about Moustakas with batting average, if they're expecting the power from him. And even the power, I'm a little bit suspicious of, because in terms of the average fly ball distances, they weren't really that much greater than what they were in the past. And yet the home run rate for the second half was something above and beyond what he had done.
What did you say? Where did you say he was going again, Adam?
Moustakas or Beltre?
Yeah, Moustakas.
I'm looking on Fantasy Pros. He's going in like the 14th round.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I'm willing to see the glass half full at that point. I don't see it as a clear-cut first half, second half thing. It was just a miserable July. His last 2 months of the season, August and September, were actually... That was his best stretch of the whole year. 900 OPS over 900 in both, batting average over 280 in both. And... he's always had a low strikeout rate. I understand the pull tendencies have killed him, the increase of infield shifts, etc. I don't think he has to be a guy who sprays it all over the field to hit for a high average with that contact rate. He just needs to be not so much of a dead pull hitter. And I think he made enough improvement in that last year that I'm willing to buy into him as a kind of a fallback third baseman in mixed leagues.
All right, Moustakas was number 9 in points, number 10 in Roto. So obviously, Heath and I have debated a lot about Adrian Beltre. He was number 8 in points, number 9 in Roto last year. Beltre is going to be 37 years old in April. He's on Scott's bust list and going in the 6th round in our draft.
Insane.
Yeah, that is crazy. And
put a poll out for that.
Well, I'm looking on Fantasy Pros. He's going 68th overall on CBS. He's going 64th overall on ESPN. Beltre is going in the 80s or 90s on the three other sites that Fantasy Pros uses to get their average. So overall, 82nd overall, which is, gosh, 7th, 8th round. What is it? I guess that would be the end of the 7th round, right? I'm not great at multiplying by 12. But yeah, I think that's the end of the 7th round.
In our industry.
Man. Adrian Beltre, you know, Beltre does still have some things he does well. He's capable of hitting 20 home runs. He has a low strikeout rate. Basically, he's what Mike Moustakas is. So why is he going 8 rounds earlier? That's why I can get behind Beltre much more as a bust candidate than Moustakas. Along with the fact that Adrian Beltre is 36 years old now. So that's, he's at that stage of his career where the numbers could just dry up completely. And he doesn't matter in fantasy at all anymore. And you just wasted your 6th round pick.
Well, okay. I'm the weirdo in the group because I actually have no problem with Beltre's average draft position. And I also don't see him as being the equivalent of Moustakas. Maybe the power is going to be pretty similar. But I think Beltre could very easily be a 300 hitter. He was the 3 seasons before last year. And I think if not for the thumb injury in the first half, that he probably would have been last year too.
817 OPS for Moustakas last year, 788 for Beltre. I mean, Moustakas was better, and the peripherals are similar. So I don't.
But I've already established I'm not really buying into what Moustakas did last year, particularly in the second half.
It sounds like you're not buying into what Beltre did last year either.
Let's frame this here, because Al mentioned the thumb injury here. Because Beltre was a completely different person before the All-Star break and after the All-Star break. After the All-Star break, he hit 318. And had an 885 OPS, which was better than Manny Machado's full season OPS. And I'm not going to just say 3 months defines a season, but if you want to buy into the he was injured narrative, then there's no way you could. He was a 255 hitter in the first half. That's crazy low for a guy who hit 315 or better each of the previous 3 seasons.
Okay. That does make the outlook a little rosier. I will agree. But it kind of just puts Beltre in the same place Robinson Cano is, where. Mm-hmm. He's at a scary age, and there's been gradual decline, particularly in terms of power, that would lead you to believe he's on the verge of collapse. So, no thank you at round 6.
Yeah, I round 6 seems a little early to me. Here's the thing. I've had this thought, and I was going to say it on tomorrow's podcast. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more, and we'll do some emails and the bustometer after this, but I feel like since I've been doing this podcast, you guys would be better to weigh in on this. It feels to me like the young talent in baseball is better than it's ever been. And it's sort of a case not to take older players that you're worried about. I'm not going to go as far as Heath. I know he like doesn't like old people. and I still think that they could be really productive, but this is a separate issue, maybe. I'm not saying don't draft Beltre, but I would just sort of spitball on here. I really want to get a lot of young players this year because there are just so many good players that came into the league last year. Players that, like Scott, you were even talking about how we used to value like 27 as the prime years, and maybe it's even younger now. Maybe it's 25-year-olds who really break out or something like that. And I'm just overwhelmed by how many great young players there are, so it's harder sometimes for me to take Adrian Beltre when there are younger options. Does that make sense, guys?
I mean, it does, but I also see the flip side, which is that I expect I probably will have Beltre in a lot of leagues this year because in a lot of leagues he's coming at great value, and I think that the risk associated with aging maybe gets a little exaggerated sometimes.
Yeah, and also I guess at third base, we're not necessarily – that's not the best position to use as an example because – the young guys are going to get drafted before him, you know, the Arenado, right. Machado, Bryant, those guys. After Beltre, Rendon, you know, if he's probably going around the same time. Seager's not young or anything. Franco, I guess, would be a good example. If I was choosing between Franco and Beltre, it would be a really tough choice for me.
It wouldn't for me, as the guy with Beltre on his bust list, but...
Yeah, and it's not for me because Franco's going a little higher than for my taste.
So you'd go Beltre, Al, and Scott, you'd go Franco? Is that what I'm gathering?
They're both going on round 6 on average, and that's higher than I want to pay for either, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. But if I'm going to pay it for one, it's Franco.
Where's Kyle Seager going?
I haven't checked later than that.
Just I'm everybody just relax. Don't reach for a third baseman and just take your steady 27 home runs and solid top 8 to top 10 production from Kyle Seager and be done with it. The most predictable player in fantasy baseball.
I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Absolutely. All righty then. Let's do the bust-o-meter. I got some names for you. 0 to 10. 0 is, nah, he'll be fine. 10 is, oh, don't draft him. He's a bust. Let's start with Jordan Zimmermann. 0 to 10.
2. Nah, he's fine.
3.
8. He's on my bust list. I think if he, I don't have a bust list, but if I did, he'd be on it. Velocity was down last year. And I was so unimpressed with him last year. You know, if you listen to the podcast in 2015, he was the guy who really ticked me off regularly. So
do you think he gets worse than he was last year?
Well, I think going to the American League is a bad thing. The park is good and the division has good parks in general, but going to the American League is not a good thing, especially when you think about the teams he faced in the National League East. They're some of the worst hitting teams in baseball, and now he's going to the American League, and I think Zimmermann could get a little bit worse.
Okay.
No, I'm not drafting him. Carlos Correa, bust-o-meter.
Well, because he's going so high, and I'm a big, big believer in Correa, but I'll give him a 4.
And I'll go 5 for the reasons Al mentioned.
D. Gordon.
This is where what exactly a bust is probably is going to get to come into play. To me, he seems very safe, even expecting some regression in batting average. So I'll say like a 2.
Mm-hmm. I'll go 3. He's going very high, so there's some risk, but I don't worry too much about Gordon.
Nelson Cruz.
That's going to be like a 6 probably for me, just because he's age, just age.
I'll go 4. I don't really see any signs to be worried about him. The age is the only one, so that makes him a 4.
Jock Peterson.
Well, he's not going that high, but I think there is there's breakout potential, but there's some bust potential too. I'll go 6 on Jock.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly how to assign this because I think he's getting drafted at a point where he's basically bust proof. So I'll say like 3, I guess.
That is true. I mean, however, I would say that if he does what he did last year, then, you know, he doesn't deserve to be drafted at all. So I guess what are the chances Jock Peterson is as bad as he was in 2015?
If you're going to phrase it that way, 5.
Okay. Is there
50-50, I'd say.
Is there a minor leaguer that might get called up with the last name or the first name of Rooney? Because I really want to expand.
Not that I know of.
The George Peterson voice. I would love to give it Rooney. Okay, it's going to have to come up organically, I guess. All right, fellas, let's read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Brad in a city in New Jersey. Al, you can go ahead and provide us with one.
Provide us with an email?
No, with
city in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Al's good at this game.
And I'm from New Jersey, so let's go with Egg Harbor.
Egg Harbor. Last two times.
My favorite harbor. Sorry.
Last two times I drove to New Jersey, I got lost, Al. Both times. with a GPS telling me what to do, but not a big fan of Jersey, I guess. Brad says, hey, Michael, Scotty, and Dennis, you guys have mentioned position scarcity. Would it be crazy to go Correa and Posey as my first two picks? Correa and Posey, first two picks.
I mean, it's not crazy. This isn't my favorite year to play position scarcity, though, because the traditionally weak positions, second base is probably actually the deepest position this year, and shortstop is deeper than it's been in a long time. So I don't really feel like playing that game. If I was going to play it in the early rounds, I'd probably draft a first baseman, actually, which is normally the last position you associate with position scarcity.
Considering that we don't really consider taking Posey probably until like the third to last pick of the second round, maybe fourth, it does seem like taking Correa, because you're not taking Correa with a top 4 pick, most likely.
Right, so, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Where you'd be drafting Correa is too early for Posey, even though he's likely to go within the same round.
Yeah, now if Posey falls to the third round.
Or where you're taking Posey is too early for Correa, if you do it that way. If you're taking Correa with the first.
Right.
Like the fourth pick or something? Yeah.
Jenny from Columbus, Ohio is in a 14-team league that allows 8 free agent pickups the entire season. I won't be able to chase saves on the waiver wire, but I also don't want to pay for a top-tier closer. So do you have any suggestions for mid-range closers who have good job security?
First one that popped in my head was Jake McGee, because pitching in Coors plus the injury history is, I think, definitely going to make him a mid-range selection at best, and I think his job is very safe.
But based on what I've been seeing in our drafts and the ADP data, he's getting drafted behind Will Smith, which is nutty. So, yeah, I don't even think you have to.
Don't have to go that low.
Yeah, exactly. AJ Ramos, I think, has suddenly become very secure in his role. Houston Street. I find David Robertson, for his strikeout potential, falls a long way.
Totally, yeah.
Behind guys like Mark Melancon. I think I've seen him even go behind Jonathan Papelbon in a draft or two.
I consider Papelbon to be fairly safe. I know Al likes Sean Kelly.
I agree. I just worry about Papelbon's trends. I think he could be vulnerable, and he's got a factor that most closers don't have in terms of the behavior.
Yeah, he did choke the star player on the team for sure.
Bad behavior.
Yeah.
Looking at this list, Sean Doolittle, think he is security?
Yes. Yeah, I'd actually call him more of a sleeper than a safe mid-round guy, though.
And I am pretty high on Drew Storen, assuming he wins the job. I feel like he will. I feel like I would love to draft right now, and I would take Drew Storen late, and it would end up being a great pick. How do you guys feel about that?
Not as good as McGee would.
Yeah.
He kind of ruins the whole late-game closer situation by being there late, because there's really I have eyes for no one else at that stage.
Wait, you'd rather have McGee than Storen?
Yes.
I would too.
Why? Well, what if today Storen wins the job in Toronto? They say he's our closer. Who would you rather have?
I'd still rather have McGee, because I think the raw stuff is better, and I do think the role would still be more secure. I mean, Ozuna's
it's not like
he's just out of the mix entirely. Yeah. And while we mostly, the narrative is that Storen collapsed down the stretch last year because he lost the closer role, and I guess was just unhappy about it. I mean, he's shown some home run tendencies, right? There's some just at face value bust potential with Storen.
I think in a consistent way, but that late season kind of swan dive that he did does concern me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think you guys are crazy, because I think if Storen gets the job and McGee gets, and if those two guys are the closers in Toronto and Colorado respectively, I truly think there's a chance that Storen could have 40 more or 20 more saves than Jake McGee.
There is a chance of that. I would agree. But there's also a chance they could have about the same number of saves.
I don't think that's true. I think that's a very remote chance.
All right.
I'm saying if they're both the closer like the whole season, I would be surprised.
I hear you. I'm just saying saves are that sporadic and unpredictable.
All right.
And it's not like Toronto. I mean, Toronto's built around hitting. They're going to win some 10-1 games and lose some 10-8 games.
Well, when it's 8-6 in the ninth inning. Storing time. So here's an email from Mark, who says, "You guys didn't catch this. Adam and Heath must have been asleep during yesterday's podcast. I had to go back and re-listen to this little ditty from Al in reference to Adam Eaton. Heath asked Al if he had any information as to why Eaton's power increased last year, as he went from hitting one home run in 2014 to 14 home runs in 2015. Al said, quote, 'The increase was due to hitting fly balls at a greater distance,' end quote. Well, no kidding. I like Al. He and I are likely closest.
That's a polite reaction, Adam.
I noticed the quote. It made sense to me because I knew what you were saying. Like he was hitting his fly balls further. And
there was a little more context there, but I didn't clue anybody else in on it. And I guess you know what my thinking is on it. So yeah, I didn't phrase that very well. But what I was trying to say is that the average fly ball distance last year went up about 15 feet. And I didn't have that figure in front of me, so that was probably partly why I was sort of soft pedaling my explanation. But it went up a significant amount. And sometimes you can see a power spike that's like Mike Moustakas, I talked about earlier in the show, where he had a big power spike in the second half, but the distances weren't really much greater. And so it just might have been the difference between, some deep flies that just went a little bit further, or, maybe just the parks that he hit them in. But with Eaton, there was clearly a big uptick in his power skill.
Okay. There we go. Makes sense. And he said, Mark said, I like Al. He and I are likely closest in age, and I get all his music references. Like when the whip comes down, I knew exactly what he was referring to. He's a cool dude. One more email, and I'll let you guys go. This is from Geraldo. Dear Tony, Steve, and Thor.
Those are Tony Stark, Rogers, and Thor, of course. The Avengers by their given names, Thor being an actual Norse god. His given name is still Thor, and also his superhero name.
Of course, of course.
Yeah.
It's a use of... That Steve Rogers, who was a pitcher back in the day for the Expos, and I'm still trying to figure out the baseball link here with these three.
It's my league's keepers costs are determined by averaging the player's draft position in the previous year with the average draft position of the current year. With that being said, my two keepers are Chris Bryant in the 6th round and Carlos Correa in the 8th round. In a 10-team mixed league, should I be going heavy with pitching to start the draft, considering the value I'm getting with those two hitters, Correa and Bryant, in rounds 6 and 8? How do you change your strategy when your keepers give you an advantage in hitting in the mid rounds?
I don't change it significantly. I think there's a point of diminishing returns, I guess, maybe when it comes to drafting starting pitchers, where part of why I like taking two in the first 5 rounds is what I perceive to be it's necessary to compete, but also the safe early round hitters dry up before the end of round 5. So the pitchers really stand out as being the elite options. I don't think you want to pass up the few safe and secure hitters you can get early for more pitchers.
I don't think I told you guys this exciting news, but I'm doing my first keeper league this year.
That is exciting.
Yeah.
That is... surprising that you've never done one before.
Not in baseball. No, I have a dynasty football league, but no, not in baseball. It's time.
I tried to invite you to the dynasty league. I said
no thanks. Never.
Which, by the way,
worst league ever.
The everybody's favorite league. The original 24 owners are still there 4 years later.
That is pretty cool, actually. I'll give you that. That is pretty cool. Well, thank you for an extended podcast, guys. I appreciate it. Know you're busy, so thank you for your time. Thank you all for listening and joining our bracket challenge. Email us to be in the podcast league. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Scott, Al, have a good day, guys.
Good day to you, sir.
Thanks, Adam.
I'm Adam Azer. See you later.